Hello and welcome to Butts to Nuts, a movie review podcast hosted by me, Ben Charlesworth, and my brother, Scott Charlesworth.
Some kind of monster!
Scott, how are you feeling after the movie?
I reckon that was pretty metal.
That was pretty nice.
Yeah?
Two things we need to establish straight off the bat. Okay. Number one, you've got 40 minutes before you're going to meddle yourself and go to a bass lesson.
Oh man, yeah, it's going to be wild.
Very fitting. Yep. So, I'll keep an eye on the time for you, babe.
Thanks, man. I've got the time as well.
Quick, let's kiss. Oh. All right.
Bit of brotherly love for you there.
We're not from Tasmania. That was a joke. Second thing. Do you have a tale for me? What do you got for me, mate?
I've got a tale of champions.
Okay.
No.
Just like Marvel's Contest of Champions, that we might... Let's get a sponsorship with them. Marvel's Contest of Champions. They've now got Gore the God Butcher from Thor.
Yes.
Sponsor us.
This is what we want.
We'll sell out.
What a niche character.
I know.
What a niche... How do you feel about the Gore design?
On Marvel's Contest of Champions?
No, about him in general in Thor Love and Thunder. From what you've seen so far.
I think he looked pretty sick.
I reckon he looks pretty sick.
Isn't it like he wears a leotard? A leotard?
In the comics, maybe.
Like he wears something weird, or it's like a G-string or something. And Christian Bale's like, no.
I'm not wearing that.
Not going to wear that.
But I think people are complaining about his character because he doesn't have the tentacles that come out of his forehead.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Hang on, no, wait. We need to somehow segue this. I was at a basketball game. I saw someone who looked like Karl Marx. I went to my friend. That looks like Karl Marx. Oh my God. The manager guy. The manager of Metallica looks like Karl Marx. We watched Metallica's Some Kind of Monster.
Oh, what a segue.
That was good.
Yeah.
I thought I'd shorten story time because I don't want your bass lesson to get ruined.
That's fine, man. No, you're so gracious.
Being flustered on the roads is the worst kind of flustered.
It is. You don't want to do that. Otherwise, you might hit an automobile.
Stating the obvious.
Yep.
And what I want to say to you, Scott, is this is our first documentary.
This is a pivotal point in our podcast.
It's only taken us 17 episodes to get to our first documentary.
Wait, it's more than 17.
It's only like taken us
25. This is our 25th episode, I'm pretty sure.
Wow, quarter of a century.
Oh my God, that deserves a high five. Jesus.
That's big.
That's a bit of an achievement.
Taken us 25 episodes to get to a documentary.
Yeah, we've been talking about this from the very start. You know, how would we implement this? And Some Kind of Monster is one of those documentaries where it's like a movie. It's like the movie length.
Yeah, so how we're going to do it is, I mean, we got plans for the future.
Wait, we won't spoil them yet, but for this stuff,
we will include documentary move, like, you know, as movie lengths. So,
that's right. Yeah.
Like that Sugar film, we'll probably end up watching that,
or stuff like that. A David Attenborough Earth or something. No, we'll chuck that in there too.
But then we probably won't watch Olivia Rodrigo's documentary unless that's a movie.
Yeah, I don't know. But the thing is who knows? Who knows? We could be spanning out. But at the moment, we're just going to keep it to one-off documentaries and we're not going to go, episodic sort of style. So if you're hoping for us to do a Dark Tourist podcast, you'll have to wait.
Yeah.
Because that's going to take a while.
So my question to you is, how did you find the first documentary?
The first documentary?
Documentary.
I think it was a good choice.
I'm saying it funny on purpose, you twits.
It was a good choice to do it. I'm so happy we went with this first for our first documentary.
Smoke up your ass, I see how it goes.
Yeah, mate.
Yeah. Patting yourself on the back.
Dude, honestly, there is so many good things about this. I just wrote, my first note is a very cool documentary with entertaining characters and a great flow of events.
Yes.
That's basically the shortened review of this documentary. It has such a nice progression of where everything goes from the pain of recording and being in this environment to the success of that at the end. And it feels really triumphant when you get to the end of the documentary.
Yeah, it does feel really good actually achieving that album because they went through so much shit.
You feel like you've gone through the ride with them, which is what the aim of this documentary wants you to feel.
Especially the fact that the days just keep showing up and it's like, it starts like off day 44 and I'm like, wow, that's a long time.
And then like the end, it's like 600
day
or something.
Day 600, you're like, oh, oh fuck.
God.
My Jesus. God.
I don't think I could work on a project for that long. The same project for that long. 2 years? More than 2 years.
More than 2 years. No.
Oh, just slight. No, just yeah. Oh, duration. Under 2 years. Under just 2 years. Just yeah. Under 2 years.
It was in the 2001 to
2002, and then they tour in 2003.
Yeah. And wow. Then they released this in 2004.
Very long time. And they were up in the air about releasing this too, about midway through
the
documentary.
Yeah, the filmmakers were like, oh, do you want us to keep making this and shit?
No, probably like 200 days in or something.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous.
And James, because didn't James say that he was fucking fed up with all the cameras and stuff?
He
the
didn't
boom
know
arm, man. The fucking boom arm.
The boom arm. My best friend over here.
Yeah. I mean, that would affect you, but do you think that they were being more reserved at times because of the camera? I mean, after 600 days, they probably started getting used to it.
Yeah, yeah. I would say yes and no. I think sometimes they were getting more explosive because the camera was there. Like, it was obviously stressing them out. But as you, yeah, you, they would have kept a lot of things to themselves. They wouldn't be exposing everything.
No, but I think you're right that he got a bit more wild. But even that argument between Lars and James, I mean, there was a few, but the big one at the start.
Yeah.
Where he walks off and slams the door. Like, I didn't find it that explosive until he slammed the door. I was like, oh, I didn't think it was that kind of argument.
Yeah, you thought it was just like a bit of a bantery sort of, like, disagreeing sort of thing. That's how it started off.
Yeah.
And it ended.
And then Kirk, guys.
Guys, guys. And he just smacks his head. He's like, why the fuck are you saying that, Lars? Stop egging him.
But who was in the right there? Because that was about drums and about the drums sounding shit.
Well, the drums sounded shit on that take. Yeah. They sounded really poor. But I think the argument was like James was getting upset that he couldn't criticize or something like that. He couldn't criticize Lars, or like Lars was doing that out of spite. Like he was.
That's right. Yeah.
Like he was kind of like making a tricky thing because it
sounds fucking stark, man.
Yeah, stark. Because he didn't think the guitars sounded unique or interesting enough, so he was like, "Oh, I got to come up with this sort of drum beat." Which, you know, a drum beat like that can work, but the way that he was doing it for that type of song just really didn't work.
Yeah, you could tell it was a 4x6, wasn't it?
Yeah, mate, it was a bloody 11:15 time. It was bloody
4x6,
7:25 time.
And I wouldn't do it like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd play more staccato. You know, I'd play them more upended.
The music techniques, they're coming out, but not in the right forms.
No, I would. I'd play a more upended staccato. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, I agree. No, you would, because then that would actually put some groove to the song instead of
fuck
just
off.
Oh, we're getting all analysis out.
You know what? I'm Lars and you're James. Let's argue, bitch. Door slam.
Door slam. Wow, what a pivotal point in this doco, eh? It was just building up to that froth. And then it frothed.
No, it frothed.
It was the beer pouring in the glass, and then he drank one too many beers and slammed the door.
Yep, he drank that head.
Yes, he did.
The head of beer.
He did drink the head.
The head.
Wow.
Question to you.
Hit me.
Okay, you know, I wouldn't say you're a Metallica fan.
I'm not a hardcore Metallica fan. I'm a casual Metallica fan.
And I'm more casual than you.
Yeah.
Even more casual. That's However, true. You have Metallica Metallica knowledge. You have a decent Metallica knowledge.
I have a basic Metallica knowledge, I would say. Yeah.
Someone who's got no knowledge of Metallica coming into this, how do you think they would like the doco?
I think you'd be in one or two minds, like, one person could go, oh man, these people are so irritating, I can't stand this. But then on another person like would go, holy crap, this is really interesting to see the artist behind the wall of the fame.
Yeah.
Like in their space. This is supposed to be private time in the studio. You're not supposed to see this stuff. And I think this documentary is actually kind of revolutionary in doing that. Like, obviously, there was docos before this, like, showing the...
It was giving BTS before BTS.
BTS before BTS. I mean, obviously, like, people like the Beatles, they did stuff like this, but didn't release it till way later, or there was that other cut in that was kind of, like, edited poorly or whatever. But this, to this degree, and showing this much raw emotion is, like, it's a big thing for a band this size to do. And I think that would be very entertaining for a new person to come in to watch that.
I also think they gave they didn't over-explain the past, where it was like, oh...
Yeah, it was,
but
like,
I feel like for someone who doesn't know a lot of their music, like, if you didn't know a lot of their music, they gave you context where you needed context, but
exactly.
They kind of mainly focused on the present, or present as in 2003 and whatever.
That's probably one of my main likings of this documentary, is those little pieces of history plopped in there. For instance, when they're talking about when are they ever going to find a new bass player after Jason leaves, and they start talking about Cliff and how heartbroken you see James is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was a really hard time for them.
And then they say some shit like the day after his funeral, they started
like
getting...
thinking about bass players and stuff.
No, they were already auditioning.
Well, yeah, oh, they pretty much were, yeah.
That's what's going to happen when you die.
That's
you
it.
Just get a straight away, get someone else in, just move on as if nothing happened.
The band, Johnny and the Johnnies.
Well, this doco is basically like how we are before the podcast, like trying to come up with content, and we're just yelling at each other.
Yeah, and it's like smacking each other.
And I'm saying, and I'm making funny drum beats out of spite. Like, I'm Lars.
You're Lars, and I'm James. I'm drinking too many beers, and you're like, but man, I'm Danish.
Yeah, I'm so Danish.
You're so Danish. You're a little Danish tart.
Yeah, I am a little Danish tart.
That could be taken in one or two ways. We mean the dessert, not a derogatory term.
No, we do.
You Danish tart. Get off the streets.
Yeah, get off the street, you Danish tart. Speaking of Danish tarts, Lars's dad. Lars's dad was...
He's pretty cool dude, eh? Delete it. Delete it. Just get it. You need people like that with honesty.
I think he was cooked.
He was so cooked. He was out in the farm
just
having a couple of doobies,
man. Just lying on Lars's, like, shoulder going...
Yeah. Nah, but he that's the kind of honesty you need in a creative field. You need people around you that's going to not be like a yes man and just tell it how it is. How, like, you want that raw emotion because that's what makes you better.
Yeah.
That's why you you share little bits of art to people before you release it. You want it to be good.
All right. Three beards. There's
three beards.
Lars's dad.
Yep.
James is at the start of his goatee, but his big goatee.
Yeah, the big goatee was cool.
Yeah, big goatee. Or
James's chin strap.
No, Karl Marx's beard.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, out of those beards, rank them 1 to 3.
Okay, so I'm going to go Lars's dad first.
Yeah.
I like that. It's Gandalf sort of style. Also a little bit ZZ Top,
yep.
Which I like that combination. I would say he's number one because it's elegant, it's long, and it's pronounced.
Yeah.
James is next.
Yes.
Because it is an established chin beard. He's like a chin bearded metal man.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's very unique.
Especially when it was long. It was like...
It was bushy.
But it was
you
like...
You could knock someone out with
that
beard.
It was manicured, though. It was... It had the edging.
It wasn't too ridiculous.
It was whippersnipped.
Karl Marx, his beard was just a fucking shit show. Like, you could pull weeds out of that thing.
He was what a dickhead.
What a fucking idiot. Well, let's talk about him. Like, people like that, they're just obsessed with the money. And he was, I don't know, like, trying to get him to do that radio thing.
Oh, that's right. He said, you have to do this, and then they'll help you out in the future kind of
thing.
Yeah.
It's like, wash your back and you stab mine or something.
That's right, they spied it in by writing that lyric.
Yeah, but that was cool how they got some lyrics out of a bad situation as well.
Yeah, cool concepts in this album, but apparently... I mean, I haven't listened to it full.
Me neither, as well.
But a lot of people hate it. I mean, we listened to a lot of it in the
show. So you can get an idea for what it sounds like. But, one big problem, which I did state to you before this, is the snare drum.
Yeah.
Like... it's the way that it was tuned, the way that Lars tuned his snare drum for this album is the problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so if he just, I don't know, he tuned out those, like, this is a bit technical here, but like the overtone sort of thing that make the ringy sort of sound.
Yeah.
It would have been tighter, especially in like some kind of monster when he's doing that ba 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 ba. It just sounds annoying with like the
doom. Sounds like a cowbell.
Sounds like a cowbell, but it's a snare drum.
And I say
it works sometimes, but it for the whole album, it's just a bit annoying.
Yeah. But no, the manager was stupid. What did he said something dumb.
he said a lot of dumb things. One massive thing when they were listening to the album, they were showing him the album, and he's like, you know, those first four songs, they exploded, but the rest of it, I don't know. It wasn't really hitting. And then at that point, you're just like, oh, I feel so sorry for the guys, Metallica.
But I feel like he said
they worked so hard on this album, and you just hear this.
Yeah, no like, one liked
after
it.
After a year of making this album.
Especially because it came out to bad. Didn't people not like it as well? Like, it came out with bad reviews, basically. Or just mediocre.
Mediocre reviews, I think. It's, I mean, like, it was more of a thrashy album, which is what the fans wanted, but I think it's the mixing and the tuning side is what kind of let it down.
Because since then, they've made three albums, and I was checking it out. Let me see what albums they were.
All have kind of been, had their own highs and lows, I think. I think Hardwired to Self-Destruct, I remember talking to my mates about it when it came out, and they were like, oh, it's not very good. I was like, oh, okay. I was very new to Metallica at that point, though, so I didn't really have a good opinion on things.
Death Magnetic.
That's the one where like the mastering engineer fucked it up. Like, they made a good album, and like the mastering engineer fucked it. I learned about that in uni.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Why? What happened?
I think they just like they presented these cool songs, and then like in the mastering process, it just got over. I don't know what happened. It probably got oversaturated with
too much staccato or something.
Too much staccato.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it basically the mix got ruined.
And then they made a fucking weird album called Lulu.
Oh, that's the one with Lou Reed from Velvet Underground.
And it's like a weird contemporary kind of weird shit.
Yeah.
Like it's like orchestral and stuff.
People either love it or hate that album.
I've seen reviews saying it's been described as The Room, like music's version of Tommy Wiseau's The Room.
Essentially, because for anyone who knows the Velvet Underground, Lou Reed, his voice was very dry, kind of spoken word.
Yeah, like how I sing.
Pretty much, but imagine that over a Metallica song. It has a weird thought to it. And it's as weird as you think.
And then Hardwired to Self-Destruct is just...
I think that was just mediocre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think anything special. Yeah, they've had a pretty... And then remember they were talking about Load and Reload as well.
Yeah, those ones were where they kind of switched up their sound a bit.
Yeah.
They went for a bit more of a modernish experimental sort of style. Like they dived into that 90s sort of vibe.
And then no one liked that, really. So they've just had...
Oh, I mean, I would say those albums have more of a cult following now.
Yeah.
Like, I would say they're more respected now than they were back then.
Yeah, right.
You know, they've got some cool tunes on it.
There's a lot of songs on them each.
But it's the early ones in the 80s. They're the ones that all the hardcore fans love.
Well, isn't it from...
The old thrash
Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, and Justice for All, and then Metallica.
Well, that's the one that everyone thinks they sold out on.
Yeah, okay.
Which I guess kind of, but it's masterfully produced, that album. So
their first four albums, then the three albums after that were like people were still like, yeah, it's pretty sweet. And then their most recent four albums. So they've had like 25 years of just people not really
digging it.
Damn.
Yeah, pretty much.
That sucks.
It does.
It's a bit like us. It's like what we'll be.
This is our future.
25 years and if no one will be digging it.
Hey, it's fine. They keep rocking.
Oh, but we're having fun.
That's right. That's the main thing. As long as you're having fun.
Kirk surfs.
Kirk?
Yeah.
Kirk surfs.
That's beautiful.
What a wholesome man, eh?
Yeah, man. Can't do the drugs and drink. Or something like that.
Replaces it with surfing.
Kirk is the best part of this doco.
He's such a good dynamic to their... He's such a good barrier between Lars and James, isn't he?
And it's my only negative because I feel like there's not enough Kirk.
Oh, man, I agree with you.
Like, there's such a focus, especially on Lars, because and I know that's where all the drama and stuff is.
Yeah.
They had, I'll spoil one of the trivia points, but won't say it properly, but they had 1,600 hours of footage over these years, right? And they cut it down to 2 hours and 20 minutes.
1,600 hours?
1,600.
My God, you would have surely gotten some more Kirk stuff that would have been...
There was only one time Kirk arced up as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful, which we'll get to in a second, but I felt proud
for him.
Oh, yeah, it was great. And I know he's not that guy, but I would have liked to see a bit more of what's he's thinking or what's his life at home. Like, we only saw surfing and that was it.
Pretty much. Or the ranch, but it was just him walking through bushes.
It was so quick and that was it. Lars is interesting, and so is James. Like, they're so interesting, but I would have liked...
A bit of a lack of balance.
Even a bit more of, what's his face? Bob.
Yeah.
Could have been cool to see a bit more of him say, you know when they just pull back and they show Lars with his art? I find that so interesting, but there was a lot of Lars. There was heaps.
It was a Lars overload, actually.
Yeah.
And I feel like some of it could have been cut down, which brings me to my point. That I kind of have a problem with this doco is it's too long.
Yeah.
Even though they cut that much footage out, I think they needed to cut a whole nother 20 minutes out.
Yeah. But
2 hours is perfect for Metallica, like a Metallica doco. I think after that much, you're pushing it.
Yeah, you know what's going on. You've seen them, get stressed and fuck around.
Put more Kirk in, cut some of the Lars stuff down, cut some of the therapy shit down, because that was a bit samey.
Too much therapy, yeah.
Too much. Even,
What was old mate's name? Louis? Larry? Leonard?
I can't even remember.
Linguist.
We'll call him Therapy Man.
Therapy Man. Yeah.
Too much of him. He was too involved. But also, he was too involved as well.
He was. It was just shots of him when they were jamming, and then in the corner, it's just him just fucking staring there. It's like, oh, you twerp. It's a bit weird,
isn't it? Yeah.
What an absolute twerp.
What a dweeb.
Yeah, what a rampscallion. No, he doesn't deserve that.
No, that's too good.
You seen the Boris Johnson video? It's not actually him, but he runs down the street, tackles someone, goes, "You rampscallions!"
That's great. Yeah. That's fantastic.
He's gone.
Partying too hard. Too many beers in the... I was going to say the White House then. too many beers in Britain.
Yeah, too many beers in Britain.
Wow. But yeah, Kirk is such an interesting character because he's the hippie that simultaneously feels out of place but also in the spot he needs to be.
Yeah.
Like, he's a hippie in a metal band. This is weird.
He is. Sorry, I'm moving a lot. There's a lot of chair noise.
That's fine. That's okay.
Yeah.
He obviously didn't start out as a hippie. He's always been quiet, but now he's like full surfer out in the wilderness. It's part of my beliefs. He's a chill dude.
Well, I mean, the thing I loved about this documentary was that focus on mental health as well.
Yeah.
The band's mental health.
It's a different perspective as well, because... you can't party hard like that forever.
No. And I think as well, these guys are still very real. Like, they're not as swept away in that whole fame. The way they dress. They just wear, like, shitty t-shirts and stuff.
I mean, that was the entire 2000s, though. Everyone was wearing shitty t-shirts. Yeah,
true.
With, like, those fucking, mad... skinny flame graphics on them.
Yeah, true.
They just look bad so design. Bad.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they are out of touch, but...
No, they're definitely in touch.
Not like properly in touch with the common man, as Hamish and Andy would say, but they're not full out of touch. They're not like you see some celebrities and they've lost the shit, you know?
That's right, yeah. I feel like they're trying to move forward.
Yeah, and I love... a good thing. You know, seeing, especially James, he was so interesting with his whole mental state. He's like, I have to go by four.
See, he's like, you can tell James is a really nice guy. Like, he's trying hard, but he just loses it. Like, he has this boiling point of all his pressure, you know, for his own ego and writing. Everything explained in the doco, like the fame, trying to rebuild that reputation, like coming back with another album, after so long. It's a big deal for someone of that fame status.
Yeah, exactly.
And he doesn't want it to be a big thing. Like, he states when he's driving the car, like, it's weird being a famous person.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he said, I'm standing out anyway with the car.
That's right. Nice car. There's two parts to him. He's like, half he wants to have a normal private life, but also he likes a bit of the flashiness.
Mm.
And if you work hard, you deserve it, you know? Put it out there.
I love as well, he comes
very interesting.
He comes back from rehab and he's a lot more chill. Have to stop at 4 o'clock, start at noon.
The routine is kicked in,
seeing my kids more. But then, like, you know, he's all kind of safe and chill. But then you see him ride his bike with there's not an inch of protective gear. Just goes on.
Just fucking zooming down the middle of the road.
Yeah, going fucking like...
ripping it.
80 Ks an hour.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. I love that.
What about, all right, touching on Bob Rock as well, he was that workhorse keeping the band rolling.
I liked him as a producer because I never felt at points he was interested in the money, he was interested in the music.
He was so just fixated on trying to help these guys create art.
And that was the difference between him and Karl Marx.
Yep.
Even the therapist at the end, not as much at the start, I didn't mind him, but at the end it was like, what, I'm going to lose my 44K a week? Or what is it? No, a month. I'm going to lose my 44K a month? This is bad, bro. I need a... boys. Don't leave me, man.
Don't leave me, man. I need this for my lifestyle.
No, you're still depressed.
Help. I need to buy my clogs.
Yeah, he was a...
my loafers.
He was a fucking weirdo.
It's that...
putting zone shit all over it, and then Bob just cracked it. He's like... fuck off,
that
man.
Was the irritating part of his character for sure. But that's the thing, yeah, the big difference between Bob and Karl Marx and Therapy Guy. Like, Bob was, he's a musician, he's an artist as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he was a bit taken aback when he heard that James had kind of lumped him in with that business world.
Mm.
He, like, the way that he thought that, the way that James thought of Bob when they were talking about James when he wasn't there for like months.
That's
and
right.
He's like kind of like sitting there silent, a bit like, oh damn, I didn't realize he thought of me like this. I thought we were like, you know,
bromies, yeah,
bromies in the studio.
Not like,
obviously he didn't think of him like that, but it was, yeah, it took some time for that to develop, which is another great thing about this documentary. It's very interesting how you see the development of every character flow towards the end.
Yeah, you get a lot of different perspectives. Not enough different perspectives, but you get a you know.
That's right, yeah.
Speaking of perspective, Dave Mustaine.
Dave Mustaine of Megadeth. Wow, what a sour man. Like, he makes some good tunes, but goddamn, you can't be that sour after a career like his.
Mm.
It's fucking ridiculous.
He's still going.
And he came out with one of the coolest, like... some of the coolest guitar tracks that he's made. All right, let me get the...
and his album covers are way better than Metallica.
Oh, yeah.
One's got the Sydney Harbour Bridge in it.
That album is... one of those songs on it is really cool. Hang on, let me...
oh, what's it called? Not Backstreet's Back.
Johnny and the Johnnies.
It's classic by MKTO, I think.
Okay, it's the album's called Dystopia... and it is called...
Damn, I'm Still Bitter. Wish I was a Metallica. Fuck you, Metallica. Fuck you, James. Damn, I saw Lars, that little Danish boy.
It's called Conquer or Die. That's that song.
Concrete or Die.
And Rozza played that for his HSC.
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows Rozza.
Rozza. We'll get him on the podcast one day.
Yeah, we'll kiss him.
But yeah, wow, Dave is a very bitter man. I don't think a lot of guys in the industry really like him that much. I know he's had a couple of feuds over the years.
Well, just being a dickhead.
Just like pissing people off, like saying things, like certain bands can't tour with his band and stuff, and I don't know.
I don't know as well, like, this is hard to say, and it's not my place to say, but I'm just going to say it.
Go for it.
How do you know, like, you know, he said, if I was back in 1982 and you told me to go to AA, I probably would have.
Nah, you fucking wouldn't have.
I
he
don't
would have
know.
Just told them to piss off and then they would have still kicked him out of the band.
Yeah, like, if it was that bad. I mean, we don't know. We weren't there. Have
That's
no
right.
idea. But Yeah, it's a difficult place. He's still very bitter. But
look, I understand the bitterness of getting kicked out, but at that point, wouldn't you have made up during the 80s? Like, gone, hey, you know what? I know we had some tough times, but, you know, let's rock out and do a tour together, because that would be sick.
And then you could have got back into the band as well.
True, yeah.
You look at someone like Bon Jovi and that, and they got like fucking how many guitarists or some shit?
I've got no idea.
Probably not that many, and I'm spitting lies. Well, like some...
But they would have had to kick Kurt out. I said Kirk. They would have had to kick Kirk out.
Just have three guitarists.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a bit of ego stroking right there. That could be a bit competition.
Still stroke
heavy.
Each other.
Yeah. But I think that the thing is, even though Kurt gets criticized for overusing his wah pedal, he needs to be in Metallica. As we said, he's that peaceful aura.
I liked him a lot.
He's beautiful.
Did you notice just the sniffs, just the in a random spots?
What?
I mean, that was just random sniffs. There was a point where they're just
Are you sure
talking.
That wasn't just Lars chewing his gum the
no,
whole fucking time?
No, yeah, that was fucking annoying.
So irritating.
No, there was just sniffs at the start. There was like three sniffs.
Yeah.
And a big sniff, and they just didn't cut that out or like silence the sniff. It was just, they were talking and they're just big. Like, my God.
Yeah.
Filmmakers, what are you doing? You had 1,600 hours, yet you kept in three sniffs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what happens when you're sifting through that much footage.
No, fuck off. Too much sniffing, bro.
Too much sniffing. Nobody can breathe from all their days of sniffing coke.
Exactly. No, it was like a cold sniff, though.
Cold sniff.
It's cold sniff. You got any more points?
I like the creative struggle. The talk about the creative struggle to come up with something new that's also good and familiar to the audience.
Not Stark, man.
Not Stark. It's just so interesting to see people think in that mindset. You know, they're trying to figure out, you know, how can we make this song the next best thing, but also stay true to ourselves?
Yeah.
Like, that is a hard thing for an artist to do,
especially
when you've had this legacy for 15 years.
And you're going through all that shit as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I really liked how it dove into that. And, oh, actually, completely different scene. My favourite scene of this doco, of course, because I'm a bass player, is the bass player audition part.
Oh, yeah.
And they're getting all the other band members to come in.
That was sick, yeah. And then Marilyn Manson's bass player.
Ziggy or Twiggy or whatever his name is.
Twiggy.
Twiggy Stick.
That was cool.
He's in some trouble now, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I think he did some bad...
Was he a pedophile or something?
I don't know, sexual abuse or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Something like that. Or spreading rumors. Like, he did something.
All true, all fact. No.
But the guy from, the bass player from Caius, which is like Josh Homme's band before he was in Queens of the Stone Age.
Oh, right.
That stoner rock.
Ah, we're singing Fuck You.
It was a couple of cool dudes. And then finally they picked Rob from Suicidal Tendencies.
Did he re-record his bass on the album, or was it still? It was still Bob's.
I think it's still Bob's.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think they would have gone, okay, let's redo everything.
No, yeah, I guess not. That wouldn't. Well, it was only the bass.
I'm pretty sure at that point they would have already been in the mastering phase where everything's cooked.
Like, yeah,
everything is
fair.
Baked.
So he just
into
has
it.
To learn it and shit.
But from then on, obviously, he would be doing his own bits.
And how good the album since then? Death Metallic. Damn, didn't even know that.
So sad.
I think that's a bit... Oh, I've just got one big point that says, a great look into the band's life and mental state, but more of a one-time experience for a cat. Like, you know, if you're a casual fan.
Yeah.
I don't think this has a lot of rewatchability.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really good time for the one time.
Having watched this for the third time, I would say I'm a bit tired of it. But I'm still going to stick with the original feeling that I had when I first watched it.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
You probably, though, would need a few years before you ever dive back in.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a casual fan, you wouldn't jump into this, I don't think, ever again.
Nah, I mean, you can access a lot of this stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, it's good.
You'd get refreshers, but I don't think you'd watch the whole thing again.
Yeah.
If you're a Metallica fan, obviously. But I mean just like a
casual.
Casual.
Just Yeah.
You'd just be like, yeah, that was really cool. Interesting. And then, like, 5 years later at a dinner party, you'd whip out one of the facts like, oh, bro, you know Lars is like, you know.
You know he's Danish?
Yeah, he's Danish, bro. Oh, that's crazy, man. Dad has a beard. He's probably dead.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you'd do. Damn. But I don't think you'd watch it again as a casual fan.
Agreed.
Shall we trivia?
Yeah, hit me.
Trivia, intro me in.
Whoa!
All right, here's trivia. I already did the first point. According to James Hetfield, Metallica Some Kind of Monster was originally meant to be a 6-part miniseries.
Wow.
It was inspired by the success of MTV's The Osbournes from 2002. So something similar has actually happened. I was going to butt in at that point, but I thought, no, let Scott Sidney shit, and then I'll say it later. And
then you can disembowel me.
Exactly. Yep. However, after seeing much of the footage, the band felt it was not the direction they wanted to take.
Yeah, I agree with that idea, because I think 6 parts would be exhausting.
Yeah. This last point of trivia is known. So obviously Bob recorded his stuff after Jason left.
Yes.
But he didn't get any writing credits because he didn't make any creative contributions, so he didn't want his name up saying "Bass by Bob."
Yeah,
"Bass by Bob."
So he didn't. He put in to say no to that.
That's how I read it.
Mm.
I don't know if it was like the band saying, "No, you didn't put any creative." I don't think that's what they would have done.
Well, as a producer, as a producer, you do creative contributions, but it's part of your job to just...
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. It does say he did not want any creative contribution. Oh, okay. No, he did not make any... Oh, no, maybe it is interpreted. I interpret as he didn't want any.
Interesting. I mean, I would understand why he wouldn't, because he's like, it's the band's thing. I'm just the producer guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seemed pretty humble.
Letterboxd review. Intro me in.
Woo!
This is from... Oh, I don't know who this is from. Let's say
Johnny and the Johnnies.
Lil Gherkin.
Lil
Gherkin says, there are two ways to view this movie. One, an absolutely hilarious yet painful documentary of sorts, on par with This Is Spinal Tap, that shows the chaos behind a horrible album and the band that got driven into insanity by it. Or two, a fly-on-the-wall view of how a band previously seen as gods of rock developed so direly... Oh, direly? Into a middling pop group. 4 stars.
I disagree with the last one.
Second point's a bit stupid. Pop group? Not really pop.
No, at all. I mean, pop, it means pop as in popular.
Yeah.
But I understand, yeah. Yeah, it is painful and it is hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
There's a lot of really funny, there's a lot of really funny Lars moments, especially when you're like, he's saying, oh, it's rock and roll. There's not supposed to be rules.
Gets in James's face. Fuck!
Or drops a champagne glass in the art gallery.
Yeah, there's lots of funny moments. It is. It's like chaos, and you can tell how there's parts that sound scrappy, I guess, in the album, because it wasn't like a cohesive...
No, that's it.
...making experience. Spencer says, enjoyed watching Kirk look wistfully over a mountain range. 3.5 stars.
That's pretty awesome, yeah.
Finally, Nathan says, dude's talking about feelings. 4 stars.
That's right. And real talk, never be scared to talk about your feelings with the bros, because the bros are there for you.
Yeah, the bros.
Just remember
that. I'll go first for my score. I'm giving it 7 nugs out of 10.
Dude, I think we're in agreement again. 7 nugs out of 10 for me as well.
Beautiful.
Yep.
This is the end of the episode. Thank you for listening to the Butts to Nuts podcast.
If you enjoyed the podcast and want to support us, you can do any number of these 3 things.
Number 1. Tell a friend, a family member, or even a random person off the street to listen to our podcast.
Number 2.
Leave a review. The higher the better.
Number 3.
Follow and support us on our social media platforms, being Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, all with the usernames Butts to Nuts.
Again, thank you for listening. See you next week.